Recorded live.
Hey, this is Rob Russell. Today's date is the 15th of April, 2012. My guest tonight is Dr. Amber Rose. She is an author of a book that called Bees in Balance. It was published in 1994. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Amber. She's done some very interesting things with bees, and what she's going to be doing tonight is talking about bee acupuncture. And I was just kind of just listening in on her in the pre-show, and she has experience at working with people with arthritis in different ways, and she has an approach that's more like a healthcare practitioner than a beekeeper. So even though this is our beekeeping segment for the month, we're going to be doing something a little more holistic medicine-oriented with a lady who's been on Animal Planet, Discovery Planet, and on in National Geographic magazine. And I'm honored, Amber, that you wanted to come back and do a second podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And I'm even better now with that intro. I feel awesome, yeah. It's good to be back. And I just spent the last 3 hours listening to my last podcast. So I'm psyched.
Yeah, so you're psyched. That last podcast is fresh in mind, is there something we just missed completely last time?
Not really, but I think I'll start with something I ended with so I don't forget, that the patron saint for beekeeping is St. Ambrose, which is about as close to my name as you can get, Amber Rose. So
yeah.
I just thought that was really interesting when I came across that when I was writing my book in 1994. I was looking in some of the beekeeper magazines, and I was looking for little filler notes to put in, you know, like little sidebars, and I came across that patron saint for beekeeping with St. Ambrose, so I thought maybe
awesome.
I would start with that.
I didn't
that.
Even know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was in Bee Culture or one of those little magazines, you know.
Well, some of the work that you've been doing has helped some people, and they probably think of you as the patron saint in their life.
Yeah. I'm not perfect, but I try as best I can to. My son calls me Mama Teresa because
yeah.
I give a lot away for free. So.
Well, I think everybody who's good at what they do needs to, you know, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I have a need to share what I know because as I was listening to the podcast that I did 2 years ago, that at some point, you know, I won't be here anymore and I want to pass the information on. Pass
right.
it to a new generation of beekeepers who might want to learn how to sting people with bees. And since I'm an acupuncturist, I do what I call bee acupuncture.
Right.
I thought I made it up, but really they've been doing it in China for 3,000 years at least. So, but it's living acupuncture where the needle is still alive, you know, because the bees are still alive before they do this, their stinging. So it's really sacred
yeah.
medicine.
Let me say one thing. I've got some background noises coming out.
Sure.
And I know it's not me, and I know it's not you. One thing sounds like somebody's washing dishes, or there's just some little banging, and there's this little screeching noise. Can you hear that?
I did hear it.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that someone would say, oh, gee, that's me. I'll stop.
That's me. I'll stop.
Who is that?
David.
David, what are you doing?
I've been working on bee boxes today.
Oh, okay. Anyways, why don't we start with a couple success stories, okay? People that you've actually worked with and you've actually, you know.
Oh, wow. People who crawled in and walked out.
Yeah.
People like
stuff
that.
Like, yeah.
You
stuff,
know?
The things that kind of make you smile at the end of the day, feel like you
yeah.
really did good.
Yeah. Well, there actually was somebody who really did crawl in, and the reason I knew he crawled in was because he was wearing shorts, and his knees were all black, you know, all scraped up. And I realized that he parked his car in front of my house, and he couldn't walk in, and he crawled all the way in on his knees.
Mm.
And then I did some stinging, and he walked out to his car. But I made him promise me that the next time that he came by and if he felt that way that he couldn't walk in, just to honk his horn and that I would come out and sting him out in the car. But he never had to do it again. It was just that one time. But I used to do something that I called McBees, like instead of McDonald's, like McBees,
mm-hmm.
where for people who it was really hard for them to get in, or they needed a wheelchair or something, even though I had a ramp, or if they were in a hurry, and they would just honk the horn, and I'd run out there with, you know, I would have some bees on tweezers and just have them all ready to go, and I'd sting them, and then 15 minutes later, they would honk the horn, and I would run out and just take out the stingers. So those are some of the success stories, but probably the two that really stand out in my mind, one is a woman who only came once. She was from somewhere in Pennsylvania, and I was living in Bethesda, Maryland at the time. And to me, Bethesda was always magical because it was like that's where Jesus healed the sick, you know, at the Pool of Bethesda. So I thought it was a magical place to be. And she heard about me, and she came down. She had MS, and she was blind. She had just been to the doctor. She had had some optic nerve, you know, retina pictures taken. And I basically showed her husband where to sting her on the back of her neck. We did a test sting to make sure she wasn't allergic, and we did a few stings in the back of the neck. And she went home, and the next day was Christmas Day. And they called me, and she was up baking cookies. And for the first time in 3 years, she could see, and she was making Christmas cookies. So that was a pretty good story. And then, of course, there's Lonnie, who's the at the beginning of the book that I wrote, he's sitting in a wheelchair. And at the beginning, we weren't even thinking about the idea of him walking. It was more about he couldn't really use his hands very well, and he wanted to be able to feed himself. So he couldn't feel very much in his hands or his arms and legs. But what happened was that we started in with the bees, and we got up to about 50 bee stings 3 times a week. And within the first month or two, he was able to even use chopsticks and eat Chinese food, and he was able to use a remote and turn on the TV and use the radio and change the channel. And these were all things he couldn't do. And they say to really, if you have MS or something that's an autoimmune disease that's systemic, that might be difficult to work with it, to give it really 3 to 6 months. So after, you know, 6 months, he said, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to walk again. And I said, well, you know, we've only really given the legs about 3 months, so why don't we try a little more? And then he called me and he said, you better come over to the nursing home. He was 38 years old in a wheelchair in a nursing home with a lot of elderly people, but he was the youngest person there. Mm-hmm. And he said, bring your camera. I'm walking.
Really?
Yeah. And so he walked out of a wheelchair, and I got the first pictures of him using a walker. Yeah, out of that wheelchair. So, but we started more with his hands because we just, you know, we really didn't know if we'd be able to make progress with his legs. So we started with the hands because that felt more important for him to have some control. And actually, he had a, this may not be dinner table conversation, so if anybody's eating dinner, you might want to, you know, turn the channel off for a little bit, but he had a catheter in. And, you know, with MS, very often, like, you don't have control over some of your bodily functions. And he had a catheter in, and he really hated it. And he had convinced the doctors and nurses that he really wanted to take it out, and they didn't think that he was going to be able to do it. And they were afraid to give it a try, and they didn't want to have to run and bring him back and forth to the bathroom or bedpan. I guess they were busy. And so he just pulled the catheter out himself, and he had full control. As we were doing the bee stings in the pubic hair area. So, but, I mean, those are some real success stories. And those are the first ones that just popped into my mind. I'm sure there are many others, but those are the, I mean, things like knee pain or back pain, you know, sometimes like one bee sting is all you need. So those are success stories, but they're not difficult.
I mean, one bee sting's all you need. I mean,
sometimes,
you know,
if it's
they can have bursitis for years and just,
it could be
something just, you know, and I was listening to the pre-show. It sounded like you went to the most, the pinpoint where the pain was most, and that's where you'd work.
Well, that's a good question, because if most of the people listening right now are beekeepers, with beekeepers, you can go anywhere. I would go anywhere on the body and not be worried about a reaction. But if we're talking about a regular person who's never been stung with bees, you know, I usually stay on the trunk of the body. I try not to go to the arms and legs too soon. Because if it's someone who's never been stung with bees, first, of course, we do a testing. Then we wait 15 minutes. And if they don't go into anaphylactic shock, and of course we have our EpiPen there to make sure, and I probably have 20 or 30 EpiPens that have been expired because I've never used one, because nobody's ever come to me has needed it. But so if we're talking about somebody who's never been stung before and they're a brand new candidate who's coming because they're in pain and they have bursitis, that's very different than a beekeeper who has bursitis. So that's a differentiation I want to make right off the bat. If it's kind of close to the shoulder, pretty close to the, you know, to the torso, right at the very top of the shoulder, you know, I certainly wouldn't hesitate too much. I might do a testing there first and see how they did. But basically, you could go there. But if we're talking about an elbow, if they have, you know, tennis elbow or something, I definitely would not go to the elbow right away. Now, you could have somebody else on another podcast who does bee sting therapy who might go to the elbow right away. But, see, I have a license to lose. I'm an acupuncturist. So anybody who's an MD or an acupuncturist or a massage therapist, anybody who's got a license to lose is going to be very conservative. So I'm on the conservative side. And so I try to do as little as possible and get the best results. But if it's pretty close to the shoulder where the arm, the upper arm hits, you know, the trunk of the body, that's close enough for me to the torso. So I would chance it, but I wouldn't go to the elbow on the first visit. But, it is possible that one bee sting might make all the difference in the world and that person may never come back and never need anything. You know, chronic pain is so much easier than MS or something that's a systemic illness like lupus or HIV or, you know, cancer or something where the body's attacking itself, you know. Rheumatoid arthritis is a little more difficult than just somebody with, you know, low back pain. But even rheumatoid arthritis is easier for me than MS. So, you know, it really, and each person is a little different. So everybody, you know, everybody's going to be different. If it's a woman who's thin and small, she's going to need fewer bee stings than somebody who's, you know, a tall man who's, you know, kind of a football player build, you know, so, but the first thing I want to say is never do bee sting therapy or bee acupuncture, never sting somebody with a bee for medical purposes without vitamin C, and I'm not talking about one glass of orange juice, I'm talking about 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams every single day, even on the days that you're not stinging.
And the reason for that is?
Oh, because when you get stung with a honeybee, it stimulates the adrenal glands to produce cortisol. And that's, I mean, everybody knows kind of what cortisone is or prednisone and that kind of thing. Cortisol is the body's natural form of cortisone. And so in order to make the cortisol, you need vitamin C. So let's say you wanted to make bread, but you didn't have any yeast or any flour. You know, you wouldn't make a very good bread. And so, but what happens with the body is if you try to make cortisol, if you're stung with a bee and you don't have enough vitamin C in your body, then the body can't make the cortisol. And guess what happens? You go into anaphylactic shock. That's how serious it is, that vitamin C. Now, animals make their own vitamin C. So if a horse or a dog is stung by a bee, doesn't matter. But if people don't have enough reserves of vitamin C in their body, you know, and they get stung by a bee or a yellow jacket or a wasp or, you know, or ant bites or snake venom, you know, they're more likely to have a problem. And I actually had a beekeeper call me in Florida and said, I'm really having trouble. I just started beekeeping. I'm a new beekeeper, and I'm getting hives. I'm breaking out in hives all over, you know, even with one or two bee stings, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And I said, how much vitamin C are you having? And he said, well, I have orange juice every day. It's just, you know, most people in Florida, they think if you just have orange juice, you know, whatever, I guess it's, you know, it, there used to be commercials out there, just, you know, one glass was enough. And it's just, if you're getting stung by bees, it's not enough, you know, so it's very important. And especially, I'm going to say this just because it's popping in my mind, but the people most at risk in the beekeeper's family is the wife, the person who's doing the laundry, or if the beekeeper is not married, but if somebody's doing the laundry, whoever's doing the laundry in that family, and, you know, the, let's say someone's wearing a bee suit, or they were, you know, whatever clothes they were wearing, and they were stung through their clothes, and some venom got on their shirt or their bee suit or on their gloves or something, and that venom is going through the washing machine. Whoever's doing that wash, if you're around the venom, but you're not getting stung, you're more likely to then, when you do get stung, go into anaphylactic shock, even if you have enough vitamin C, because you've been around the venom, but you've never been stung. So that's very important for anybody listening who's thinking maybe they might want to get into this, either as a hobby or trying it for themselves, or even just beekeepers interested in the topic, that anyone in their family might, you know, be at a potential risk if they're around the bees but they're not getting stung. If they're around somebody who's getting stung and around the clothing, you know, but somehow, because I know people who collect venom and, you know, who've gotten stung from time to time, but they spend a lot of time collecting the venom and then they scrape it off a plate with a razor blade. You can look online, there are people online, you know, you can see videos on YouTube of people scraping venom. It almost, I don't know, because I've never done heroin, but I gather if it's white like that, it looks like, you know, heroin or something, and they scrape it with a razor blade. And if you're doing that and you're not getting stung, you're more at risk if you're collecting venom or you're around the venom and you're not getting stung. You're more at risk for anaphylactic shock. So that's why even those people have to make sure that they're taking their vitamin C.
That's probably a good thing, David, for us to keep in mind that when we're doing removal work. That, David, you here?
Did he hang up?
I don't know.
I'm here. I had to mute him.
Oh, okay. I was just thinking, you know, just the whole idea of keeping lots of vitamin C in us if we're doing bee removal work, that might make a lot of sense.
It definitely does.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you have some, even just the chewable vitamin C, it'll get into your system really quickly if you're not around, you know, something to drink and you just have it in your pocket or something, you know, in a plastic bag. You can carry some chewable.
So would it be all right if we got stung and we haven't been taking it to take some vitamin C, or is it just too late?
No. You can
get
take
it in
it.
Your system?
No, just get it in your system right away. You know, I would.
So what are some other ways of taking it? When you said it's, you know, the orange juice, I think you said it's like
85.
And then we could buy it prepared as a, you know, as vitamin C tablets. Are there other ways that we can get vitamin C? I mean, you know, we just naturally can't get 2,000 units.
It's hard to get 2,000 to 3,000. And if you're a guy and you're kind of tall and you're sort of muscular, you're needing more like on the 3,000 side, whereas someone small like me that weighs 100 pounds, you know, I could maybe get away with 2,000, but you guys probably can't. And if you're going to be getting, if you're doing removal and you got, you know, some nasty bees there that are real angry, you know, and sometimes I don't know what kind of suits you wear when you do the removal, but, you know, if they're stinging right through the suit, you know, it's possible that you're at risk. Or if you get a lot of the venom on your suit, but the, you know, you're not really getting stung, you've got that venom on your suit, and then when you take it off, it gets on your hands, you know, and it's probably a good idea. And to even do it on the days when you're not doing the removal, it's better to be, you know, to take 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day, every day, you know, during the time of year that you're working with bees. I mean, I guess in Florida and Atlanta, maybe you don't have a time when you're not working with bees, but up here, you know, our bees hibernate in the winter, so you don't have a lot of people in New York necessarily working with their bees in the winter. But in your country, in your part of the world, you might be working with bees a lot more, so you might need to take it all year round.
Yeah.
But if you haven't had a problem so far, maybe you won't. But you never know.
I get hammered on the property every now and then just because I'm there and they're there.
Yeah. So it couldn't hurt to have, you know, I know somebody who did, you know, bee venom collection for a living. He's still doing it. He lived to tell the tale. But he, you know, he felt like, you know, he didn't get stung very often, but he was doing that collecting, was scraping it off the glass container. And he was out in the bee yard. He was way out in the country in Alberta, Canada. And, I mean, basically he had a couple of EpiPens with him, but by the time he shot himself up with it, it
mm-hmm.
was really too late. And he, you know, he went into anaphylactic shock and he collapsed and he shot himself with a couple of EpiPens through his bee suit. But, and he wrote a note, on his body, if anybody finds me, you know, just this is what's happened. And, but he did survive. But he used two EpiPens and he did, you know, he did go unconscious, but he did wake up eventually. But, I mean, that's an example of an experienced beekeeper, you know, but he was collecting venom, so he was around a lot of, you know, bees that were angry because, you know, I mean, he was using electric shock therapy, so to speak, you know. So it's real powerful. And it's, you know, the bees are not happy campers because they, you know, somebody's invading their hive.
Right.
You know, and a whole bee yard. It's not just one hive. I mean, he had a variety of things, you know, equipment that was up, and he might have been collecting venom from maybe 10 or 20 hives at one time. And so he, you know, he was at great risk, and he didn't have any vitamin C with him. So I highly recommend chewable vitamin C. You can, I mean, in, you know, in hot weather, it doesn't really last in the cars very well. You might want to keep it in a cooler or something, you know, because it'll just sort of melt, you know, because it'll disintegrate a little bit, or it sort of melts away. Or you also, you know, you have, if you have liquid in the car, they have that emergency that you can rip open those little
yeah, it's emergency. Yeah.
Emergen-C.
Right.
And you rip them open, and it's 1,000 milligrams at a time, and it comes in a million different flavors. And you get it at the health food store, and maybe you can even get it at a Target now or something, or Walmart, probably cheaper, you know, or one of those, you know, Costco or something. But that's a good way of getting 1,000 milligrams at once.
So basically, all of us should be doing 2 and probably 3.
Yeah, guys should be doing 3. And gals who are slight and thin, you know, could maybe get away with 2. But anybody that you're stinging on purpose, who's, you know, if you want to call it, let's say, a patient or somebody who's receiving bee stings, who's not a beekeeper or who is a beekeeper but who's stinging themselves on purpose medicinally, should definitely be doing the vitamin C. And one thing that I don't know if I already said it or I said it in the pre-show, but that the alcohol, drinking alcohol 24 hours or before and after bee stings is not the greatest idea. And also swabbing the area, like if you want to wipe the area to clean it before you do a bee sting. First of all, the stinger inside the honeybee is sterile because it's inside the bee. So it's not outside the bee, so obviously it's sterile. And so there's no need to wipe the area unless it's really dirty, but I wouldn't use soap and water. I wouldn't use alcohol. I would just, if you feel like you need to wipe the area, I would just use plain water. I would not take out an alcohol swab and swipe the area. The patient's going to call me 6 months down the road and say, I've been doing bee venom therapy or bee sting therapy for 6 months, and I'm not getting any results. And the culprit, the first one I ask is, how much vitamin C are you taking? And if they're taking enough, the next question is, are you swabbing the skin with alcohol? And usually it's one of those two things, whether drinking alcohol before or after within 24 hours. So we're talking about, like, no beer, no wine, no wine coolers, you know. It's you know, it's really a lifestyle change, you know, if you're going to do this medicinally. And, I mean, if it's a one-time thing and you have, you know, tennis elbow or something, that's one thing. But if we're talking about MS, we're looking at 3 to 6 months before you even know if you're getting results. And so really it's a lifestyle change. You have to be willing to say, I'm going to give it 3 to 6 months before I give up. So the vitamin C, the alcohol issue, or the first two things, then you want to stay on the trunk of the body, meaning the torso, not the arms and legs right away. Because what happens if you go to the arms and legs really soon and the person's not a beekeeper, you'll get a lot of swelling, a lot of redness, a lot of itching. People will get scared and they'll give up. And you don't want that. You want them to come back. You want them to keep going. You don't want them to give up. And no matter how many times, if people are in a hurry, they will yes you to death. They will say, okay, I know, I stay on the trunk of my body. They get home, and the first thing they do is they have MS, and they're having a leg that they're dragging, and they'll take, and they'll do 7 bee stings, you know, in their leg. And then they decide to go to the emergency room, and they, you know, because they don't like the reaction they're getting, because it swelled up. And then they give up. And so now I have that. I have a consent form. I have everybody sign a consent form, you know, that they know that they might die, and I'm not twisting their arm, and they consent to being stung by me. And I put right in there that they will stay on the trunk of their body for the first month, because I really don't want people ending up in emergency rooms and giving us a bad name, you know, giving bee acupuncture or bee sting therapy or bee venom therapy a bad name, or the honeybees a bad name, because they didn't follow my directions. So that's part of the reason I wrote my book, and I like to talk about this work, is to make sure that every beekeeper out there who's being generous and giving bees away in a jar knows that, you know, that's not enough. You have to make sure they're taking enough vitamin C, and you have to make sure they're not doing the alcohol, and you have to make sure they're staying on the trunk of the body for the first at least 2 to 3 weeks, or maybe even a month. And the people at the greatest risk for having a strong reaction, and I don't mean anaphylactic shock necessarily, but just something that's intense, that's hard for someone to handle, are women or men who are very thin. You know, they're going to have a stronger reaction because there's not a lot of excess weight or muscle to absorb everything. Or people who went, they have arthritis in their hands, and they went right to their hands, and they didn't follow what I said and stay on the trunk of the body. And those are the people that struggle the most with it and call me for tips. You know, what did I do wrong? And, you know, I'll admit at the beginning, when I had people asking me or coming to me and begging me to do their ankle or to do their hand first, at the beginning, you know, I kind of gave in. And then I paid the price. And at a certain point, I just said to myself, this is the last time I'm doing this. Because the person ended up in the emergency room because they had so much swelling. They didn't like it, you know, couldn't handle it. So I have a strict rule now, stay on the trunk of the body first month, you know. And then very slowly, if you want, first of all, if you're working on the spine, if you're on the back of the body, if you go above the waist on your spine, you know, on either side of your spine or in the middle of the vertebrae, if you go above the waist, you're working on your arms and your hands. So it doesn't mean that just because you're working on your back doesn't mean you're not working on your hands or your arms. And if you go below the waist, you're working on your legs and your knees and your feet. So let's say you have problems in your feet. and you have strict rules that you can't go to your feet with the bees, what you want to do is go down to the very, very bottom of your tailbone and sting at the very bottom of your tailbone because you're still on the back. Now, you're following my rule of staying on the trunk of the body, but, you know, the further you go down on the bottom, you know, on the back of your spine, you're actually working on the nerves that go to your toes and your feet. So you can actually get to your feet by going to the bottom of your sacrum, to your tailbone. If, you know, if you want to work on your knees, you go a little higher up. If you want, you know, to work on your thighs, you go a little higher up. But if you're really wanting, if somebody has a bad back, you know, I would go directly where the pain is. Then you're lucky because the pain is in the comfort zone that I'm allowing you to work with. If somebody has, in the last podcast we did, there was somebody who had somewhat of a chronic appendix problem, but it was not at a level where they were taking the appendix out. They were just watching it. And I recommended that they sting on the abdomen, basically wherever the pain was. So if you've got pain, you know, in your abdomen, on the back of your body, you know, on your spine, in your, you know, shoulders, but really mostly on the back. I wouldn't go too high up on the neck, really, but if you stay, you know, sort of at the top of, you know, what I would call C7 or the seventh vertical, which is like the big bony part of the spine that sort of sticks up in the back, at the bottom of your neck. If you stay below that, the reason I say that is within the first five to seven treatments, you get what's called a healing crisis. And those of you who have heard me speak before will know that I speak about this a lot because people do get discouraged. A healing crisis, you can't get well without a healing crisis, but the healing crisis might not be that pleasant. But generally, it feels like flu-like symptoms. You might just feel like a sense of malaise or that you're getting the flu. You might feel like you just want to stay in bed, like you feel kind of, you know, logy or, you know, like you're coming down with a flu. You might have diarrhea. You might not. You might just have some cramps or something. But mostly it's just kind of a feeling of I'm getting the flu. And you just basically listen to your body and you just, you know, kind of go to bed early that night, take it easy and that type of thing. But that's the healing crisis. You know, you may get a slight fever. And, you know, basically, the focus is once you've had that healing crisis, then you have a chance to get well. But if you, let's say you do two or three treatments and you don't like the itchiness and you give up, the next time you're stung by a bee, you're going to be starting at a place of, well, gee, it's not the first time I've been stung. I've already been stung three sessions before. This is my fourth time, and maybe then you'll go into the healing crisis. So you kind of start where you left off. And Charlie Mraz, who was my teacher, who was, you know, who died in around 2000, but he was like the king of bee venom therapy, and he kept it alive until people like, you know, me came along, you know, kept it going. But he always said, if somebody has a bad reaction to the bees, never stop with that bad reaction. Never, ever stop with that. Because let's say they're out at a church picnic, the next time they get stung by a honeybee or a yellow jacket or something, you know, they could have a very strong reaction because they stopped at a time when they hadn't really finished the healing crisis. So if somebody has a bad reaction, I always invite them to come back. You know, of course, I don't charge for the bees, so it's not about money or anything. They don't have to worry about paying me. But I never end on a bad note and make sure they never end, you know, feeling upset about it or that they want to stop because they didn't like the reaction. I always just do a testing. What I mean by that is I ice up the area. I lean the rear end of the, you know, the honeybee up against their skin. They are stung, and I take the stinger out immediately. That's what I call a testing. So it's in there like a few seconds, and that's how you end. You do not end with, you know, a whole bunch of bee stings, and then you decide you don't like the reaction, and then you stop, because that's not a good way to stop. Yeah. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I went on and on for a while, so probably somewhere the answer was in there.
Yeah, I think it was, and then some.
Yeah.
Because
but,
it was,
you know,
just absolutely awesome to interview you, because I think you just went 20 minutes without me even saying anything.
Yeah, well, because I know where the pitfalls are, and I've been doing this, I realize I counted, it's like, you know, this June I'm coming up into my 19th anniversary of stinging people with bees. So I'm almost up to 20 years now. It's like a long time. You know, people could be married for 20 years. So, you know, it's a long relationship I've had with the honeybees in terms of actually stinging with bees. And so I know, you know, where people fall down, you know, where they feel like they didn't have the education they needed, you know, to get going. And usually it's the vitamin C and, you know, and the alcohol and maybe going to the arms and legs too soon. So that's, in a nutshell, if I were to say the three places where people hit snags and they give up, you know, or they have a problem, are those three areas. So we can prevent all of that just in the first 20 minutes of this podcast. Yeah. So
we have got some other people online, and I'm going to
see
if I can get them involved.
Okay.
One of them, I'm going to make sure before I say his name, but I think he's online. Yeah, Rob Overton. You know who he is?
I think I certainly do. I wonder if my eye.
Rob probably spent the majority of the last podcast talking to you. You
yes,
were his guest, not mine.
Oh, I see. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Sounds like the Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I had to reboot my system to get on.
Okay.
Good to talk to you. I guess I just have a few things I'd like to add my personal experience,
sure.
You know, starting out. You know, as a beekeeper, I wasn't new to bee stings, but, you know, I really struggled starting, you know, with the trunk of my body. I think I started on one side and I'd alternate to the other side. And the biggest thing, I mean, the itching was unbearable, but the welts from the bee sting, it took weeks. I mean, 3-4 weeks for those welts to discoloring to go away. But yet once I got, you know, once I moved to my elbows, it was, you know, within I go from side to side, but before I got to the next, I was up to like twice a week stinging myself. But I wouldn't have any scarring or anything on my elbows. I don't know if it's just that the skin on your midsection is you know softer or more you know issues. But it got to the point where I didn't want to sting myself anymore because I had all these you know scarring like you know almost like. Like blood spots and stuff from the stings.
Well,
and like I said, some of them took a long time to go away.
Well, I have my first two reactions are one is you probably as a beekeeper had more stings to your arms and legs than you did to the trunk of your body. So your arms and legs were more used to the venom. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So most of the time that beekeepers are stung, they're not usually, you know, stung on naked, you know, trunk, you know, front and back, you know, your stomach or something. But as a beekeeper, you didn't have to start on the trunk. You could have started on the arms and legs. I'm so sorry that you spent all of that whole month doing that because you didn't need to. As a beekeeper, you can go wherever you want to go. It's only the people who are not beekeepers that must start on the trunk of their body.
Yeah, I'm sure I didn't go the whole month. I probably cheated it because I was like I said,
That's
I was
okay.
getting. You know, it's like I'm back and forth, and I'm going to go back to the original spot, and I still got these you know scars. And it's like,
yeah.
Where do I? I'm running out of places to sting, and I'm like, these ain't going away. And then,
right.
But then once I moved to my elbows, I think I was up to 11 or 15 at a time. But you know, they would you know within days. It would be, you know, I'd be normal. There'd be no scarring or any kind of marks left. So that was.
It's not because the torso has a different kind of skin or something. It's just that you've had a lot more stings in your arms and legs, and so you that part of your body was used to it, and it was just that you hadn't been stung that much in the torso.
Yes.
But as a beekeeper, and for any beekeepers listening, you can go anywhere. You guys have, like, total, and gals have total freedom. I mean, you can sting on your elbows, on your knees, on your toes. I don't care. It's the people, you know, who've never been stung before. If you go right to their elbow, you know, they're going to have the reaction that you had on your torso because you were stinging yourself in places where you hadn't been stung before. And that's what's going to happen to newbies, new people who are coming to you. If you sting them in a place where they've never, ever been stung before, it's going to swell. And especially the further it is away from the heart, the more circulation it takes time to get down to the toes or the fingers. So it's going to take a long time for the venom to disappear. So it's those rules are for people who've never been stung before.
So right, and I guess my word of advice is, you know, don't get frustrated if you still have welts and, you know, and like scabbing and stuff from stings from weeks before. I mean, eventually it does go away, and you know, I guess as you get used to it, the effects aren't as bad long term. But it, you know, when you first start out,
are you still there?
I think we lost him.
Oh gosh,
I'm here. I'm here.
You're back. It's absolutely true what you're saying. I will say right off, the first month is the hardest, whether you're a beekeeper and you're stinging a part of your body that you've never stung before, or you're a brand new person and you've never had bee stings. I promise in my book, I said the first month is the hardest. And if you can just get past that healing crisis and get past that first month, but honestly, my first real medicinal bee stings were in my, basically my crotch area, in my pubic hair, because I had a bladder infection that wouldn't go away. And I'm telling you, oh man, the itching. And in the middle of the night, when you're half asleep, you scratch. And if it's in a place where you can reach, the more you scratch, it's like poison ivy. The worse it gets. So the whole key is, and I'm going to give you another one of my little secrets here. The whole key is ice. Ice, ice, ice. Ice. You know, the more you itch, the more ice you use. If you can't sleep, you get up, get an ice pack, you put it on wherever the bee stings are, and you try to go back to sleep. And even if, you know, if you stung your hand and it was swelling up and you can't sleep and it's throbbing, you put your hand in a bag full of ice. That's the best friend of somebody doing bee stings is ice. You don't want to use Benadryl. You don't want to use calamine lotion. You don't want to. At one point, I was recommending Preparation H because that's what people were trying to do to get the pain. Then we discovered there was alcohol in that, you know. So, and some people would use like, you know, spray for sunburn or something. I mean, the best thing is ice. Absolutely. So I bought a lot of ice packs. You know, you don't want to use real ice unless you have to, but ice packs that you can get for 99 cents in the dollar store or something, those really soft gel packs, or even the hard ones that you use in a picnic basket, in a freezer basket, they're going to be your best friend if you're not used to the stings. So, but Rob, I'm glad you brought it up because I feel like I owe you an apology because as a beekeeper, you didn't need to sting on the torso. You could have gone straight to your elbow.
And no apology necessary.
All right. Well, at least you're sharing your story so that other people can learn from it. That's how we learn. We learn more from our mistakes than our successes, actually. I've learned. Any other words of wisdom, Rob Overton, that you want to share as somebody who's been doing this treatment for yourself?
That was the most difficult part, and you know, where I had, you know, as being a beekeeper, where I was to the point where, do I continue on, or I really had to put my mind to it and determination to stick with it. So I could, you know, I could see where somebody that's not involved with bees could be really, you know, questioning whether they really need to could continue or not. But if you,
yeah.
you know, and I think you said yeah. if you just stick it out, it you know, it does get better.
It does get better. It's, the first month is the hardest. And unless you have somebody really supportive to talk to, and anybody who's listening to this podcast, you know, if you're going to be stinging other people, you can use me as a resource. You can call me anytime. You can email me anytime if you have questions. You know, just pick my brain because, you know, as I said earlier, at some point I won't be here, and I have a tremendous need to pass this on because Charlie passed it to me. It's a gift. And I need to pass it on because it's burning a hole in my heart if I can't share it. And that's why it's very important to me to keep these podcasts going and these to, you know, get my information out there. So
I do have a question for you. If you could talk a little bit about, you know, bee stings for like food allergies. Is there any, you know, benefit or help there?
Well, my first thought would be pollen. You know, I'm a big fan of all the honeybee products, you know, and I'm sure everybody listening to this probably is, because I hear the word allergies, and my first thought is, you know, I want to go with pollen, because most food comes from things that are grown, and on some level, you know, pollen's involved in things that are grown, you know, but if we're looking at bee venom itself, food allergies, first of all, we have two words there, food, and then we have allergies. So I'm going to deal with them separately. The first word being food, as soon as you put food in your mouth, you start to salivate. And so digestion begins in the mouth. And most people think, you know, when you eat food, it goes into your stomach. But actually, it really starts digesting in the mouth, goes down, and you swallow it, and then it eventually goes down to the stomach. So in Chinese medicine, there's the stomach meridian or pathway. You know, so as an acupuncturist, I'm very interested in stinging on the acupuncture points. So I'm going to dissect what people say in part of their question or when they tell their story. And so I'm starting with the word food, and I'm thinking, okay, stomach, that's part of the earth element. So we have to really look at the stomach meridian. The stomach meridian starts at underneath the pupil of the eye in the little bony socket that's in the orbit of the eye. Most people wouldn't want to sting their face. But if you actually, you know, look at the pictures in either my book or any acupuncture book and you look at the stomach meridian, it has a whole bunch of points, like maybe 10 or so points going, you know, down from the eye, down to the corner of the mouth, and then up in front of the ear, and then down the neck, and down the front of the body, and down the leg, and then all the way down and exits on the second toe. So if it's a person who is brand new and they're coming to you with food allergies, anything to do with food is going to relate to the stomach. So I would pick a part of the stomach meridian that's on the trunk of the body. Unless they're a beekeeper, then you can go anywhere on the stomach meridian. Now, probably they don't want to be stung on their face. Most people wouldn't. So, but I have stung people on their face, and especially people who want to see better. I've stung at the side of the eye, you know, which is a different meridian. But so you can take a look at the stomach meridian, and you could actually, there are lots and lots of points, and it goes right through the nipple and goes right down the front of the chest. So if you're staying on the front of the body, on the trunk of the body, or if you're graduating to doing the upper part of the thigh, or you want to go to, in the last podcast, there was someone named Mickey. I don't know if he's on tonight, but he was talking about his dog, and he was talking about doing stomach 36. Stomach 36 is a really great point that's right under the knee, the kneecap. But, you know, for beekeepers, that would be fine. But somebody, a brand new person, I wouldn't go there right away. But a beekeeper who's been stung on their arms and legs before and is fairly immune, you know, doesn't have huge reactions, you could start with stomach 36. That would be an excellent point. It's an earth point on an earth pathway. You could do it at the right time of day for the stomach, and there's something called a Chinese clock. So there's a time of day for each of the meridians. There are 12 major meridians in the body, which are like highways on the body, and they're 24 hours in a day. So every highway in the body, every organ, you know, has a time of day that goes with it. So the stomach is, you know, between 7 in the morning and 9 in the morning, but we're in daylight savings time, so, you know, we have to subtract an hour. So it would be between 8 and 10 in the morning. But basically, so if you start with the word food, I would think about the stomach, and you could also think about the spleen, because the spleen and stomach go together, they're brother and sister, and they're both part of the earth element, and earth has to do with food and weight issues, mothering, nurturing, and one of the ways we nurture ourselves or survive on the planet is by eating. Then the word allergies. It depends on how the allergies manifest themselves. Now, people who are allergic to dairy, I might recommend something different. So the person who asked the question, was it you, Rob Overton, asking
yes.
the question? Okay. Were you just asking a generic question, or was it, is the person, you were thinking of a particular person, and is it an allergy to a particular food group, or just
yeah.
in general?
It just seems to be in general. I mean, they just seem to, when they eat, they get itchiness throughout their whole body. I mean, it's nothing anaphylactic or anything like that. It's not, you know, they've tried cutting out dairy, they've tried cutting out gluten, and it just seems that, you know, they've only been unable to isolate it.
Okay. And is the itchiness on their skin? Or
yeah.
does it feel like it's inside the body?
I believe it's on the skin, but there's no, you know, there's no hives or rash or
nothing
anything.
Nothing visible,
but
it just feels like their skin feels itchy, but there's nothing to show for it. They can't
exactly.
see anything. Okay, so the skin, this makes it very easy for me, because the skin is the third lung in Chinese medicine. So we're born, most people are born with two lungs, and unless you've had a lung, you know, taken out, you have two lungs. And that's how you breathe. But you also breathe through your skin, and you inhale and exhale through your skin, and you perspire through your skin. So the skin in Chinese medicine is called the third lung. And there's a meridian that's called the lung. And so I would think in their case, food and itchiness on the skin. Okay, so the earth element, stomach and the spleen are part of the earth element, and in the five elements of Chinese medicine, the earth element is the mother of the skin. I know I'm kind of, I don't have a chalkboard, so I can't draw you the diagram, but trust me that there is a connection. So if you think about it, that if a mother has a little baby and the mother doesn't have enough breast milk to feed that baby is going to be screaming its head off, and that baby in this case is the lungs. And so when you eat something, you're eating, it goes into the stomach, and then the spleen can't transform the food properly, and so then the next element that would be involved, even though the food doesn't go directly to the lungs after it leaves the stomach, obviously, goes to the small intestine, but what's happening is the stomach and the spleen are not processing the food properly, and so what happens is that the child of that earth element, the child is the lungs, is saying, I'm having trouble and I'm itchy and somebody has to help me, and until you help me, I'm just going to keep itching, and I'm not going to stop itching until you solve the problem. And the problem is that somehow that food that they're eating is not being transformed properly. And so, you know, when apples need to be picked off a tree, if they drop to, if you wait too long and they drop to the ground, they rot. That's what's happening. The food is not being, the apples are not being picked off the tree at the exact right time. The trucks are not ready to bring it to the market. And those apples are dropping to the ground and they're rotting there. And the food is not getting where it needs to go. And the person could have a myriad of symptoms. In this case, it's the problem seems to be showing up on their skin in terms of the way they feel. They can't see anything, but they feel like itchy. So it's a systemic reaction because it's all over the whole body. They don't just itch on one elbow, right? They're itching on their whole body.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's systemic. It's going through the whole body. It's not isolated. It's not localized in one area. Otherwise, I might respond differently. But and if it's the skin, I would say that the apples are falling off the trees and rotting on the ground, and the food is not getting where it needs to go. So I would start helping the stomach and the spleen if they're local and they're in this area. I mean, I'm happy to, you know, or anybody who can reach me by phone, I'm happy to talk with them. But if, Rob, if you know them and if you want to do some bee stings, I would start with stomach 36. Except,
okay.
Have they ever been stung before? Are they beekeepers? No, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, they are? Okay, good. So then it makes it easier. All right. So, so that means if they're beekeepers, you can go anywhere you want to go. And I would go to stomach 36 first, which is just below the knee. And I would take a look, since you have my book, and I take a look at the stomach meridian and ask them to take a look at all the names of the points and see if any of the names of the points jump out at them. You know, like stomach 36 is called leg 3 miles. It was a point that was done for somebody who has to walk a really long distance to the next town. And usually in China, it was women that were, you know, walking to the next town to maybe, you know, get food or you know, go to market or something like that. And they did that point because they needed energy to get to the next town. So it's a real reservoir of energy. So the person should get lots of energy from it. And I would do it between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. If you, that's the first thing. Now, the next place where I would go would be, if it were me and if it was somebody that I really trusted was not going to have a bad reaction, and the weather's getting a little warmer here, so if you had to, you could wear sandals. I would go to spleen 3 next. Now, spleen 3 is kind of, you know, where some people get bunions. You know, they used to say in the old days, like my grandmother used to have a bunion, and they would have to wear special shoes. It's like kind of near where the bone flares out by the big toe. And maybe people don't really, you know, if you're still wearing shoes and sneakers and stuff, but if you can wear sandals and that foot could air out, you know, personally, I would go there next. But you could go to anywhere on the spleen or stomach meridian, and you can also go on the lung meridian as well. And usually I start with a source point, in this case on the lung, that would be lung 9. And that's kind of where the crease, if you move your palm towards your elbow, if you're have your palm up and you move your palm sort of up towards your face, there's like a crease in your wrist, and it's kind of right under the big mound where your thumb is. It's kind of in that area of the wrist crease, if you look in my book under lung 9. But that point is it's called very great abyss, but it's also, in case you ever need it, it's called corpse reviver, and they often do it on gurneys in hospitals in China, where it seems like somebody's sort of passed over to the other life, and you want to revive them, and you just stick a needle in lung 9, and you can bring them back.
Now, you say like start with stomach 36, but if they've worked themselves up to, you know, multiple, can you do multiple points at one time, or do you stick to one particular?
Oh, no, you can. How many stings are they doing right now?
None, but I imagine, you know, like I said, a beekeeper, a couple weeks they'll be up to, and I was just curious,
yeah,
after they get up to, you know, a handful of stings.
Yeah, when they can handle, let's say, when they're up to, let's say, either 3 or 5 stings, or even if they get themselves eventually up to 10 stings at one time, or 8 stings, you know, depending on what they can tolerate. What you can do, if you're doing stomach 36 for the first time and it's not already red, now, I know I've said this before in the other podcast, but I'm going to say it because there might be new people listening to this. I don't sting where it's already red. So if it's already red, that means there's still some venom there, and I don't want to waste venom. So I might sting in another area. But like you could do, like if you really wanted to blitz that one, you could do like stomach 36, and you could do like 3 stings, like one on top of the other. You do one, and, you know, of course you take the bee away, and then you're still left with a stinger there that's still pulsing, and you're leaving that stinger in
right.
for 10 or 15 minutes. And you could do another sting right, like as close as you can get to it. And so I call that like a double sting or a triple sting. You could do like 3 or 4 bee stings. And let's say your acupuncture location, point location is not so great, you know, because you don't have my training. So, you know, by doing 3 or 4 stings right really close by there, you're going to get a lot of venom there. So eventually it's going to go to the point. In other words, you don't, with bee venom, you don't have to be exactly fabulous with your point location the same way you would with a needle, like an acupuncturist. It has to be spot on, otherwise you miss the point. With bee venom, spreads out, you know. But you could do 3 or 4 stings on stomach 36. But I would just go up the, you know, up and down the whole meridian. The stomach meridian has 45 points. That's a lot of places to sting. The spleen has 21 points. Now, these meridians that I'm talking about, these 12 major meridians, are on both sides of the body. So now you can double that. So now the stomach meridian, although it has 45 points, but you got 2 of them, you got 90 points.
Wow.
And the spleen has 21 points, so you've got 42 points you can sting. You got a lot of wiggle room there, and then the lung doesn't have that many, you know. You know, it has like 11 points, but I mean, that's times 22. But, you know, so times 2, that would be 22. But I mean, you know, you'll play it by ear and see what works. But make sure they're having enough vitamin C. Now, can they tolerate vitamin C? Because you're telling me they have food allergies, so can they tolerate the vitamin C? Because it needs
Yeah, that's a good question.
3 to 4. Well, how big is this person? Is it a woman?
No, it's a man.
A man? And is the man sort of tall and muscular? Or is it a kind of skinny man, you know?
I'd say
average.
Average, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he's not very muscular, but not
extremely emaciated. So you're looking at really 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams. So if this person's been doing bee stings for a while, or they're a beekeeper and they're having this food allergy problem, they may be actually having a slight deficiency in their ability to make the cortisol. That'll make them itchy.
Interesting.
They're, you know, if they're doing bee stings without the vitamin C, they may have trouble, even if they don't have visible skin rash. They may be having trouble making the cortisol. And so when you're stung by a honeybee, or any stinging insect for that matter, or red ants or something, the adrenal glands would sit right up on top of the kidney. They make, you know, cortisol, which is the body's own natural cortisone. So in order to make that cortisol, you need vitamin C. So if the body can't make it, the body's going to have a reaction. And if it's really serious, it'll be anaphylactic shock, and you'll need the EpiPen. If it's, you know, not that bad, they might just get hives and welts all over their whole body, or they might, you know, their scalp may itch, or their palms may itch, or their feet, you know. But it sounds like maybe this person is, if this person is a beekeeper and they're having food allergies, it may be the food allergies, or it might be the bee venom, and they don't have enough vitamin C in their system to make the cortisol, and their body's just reacting.
Yeah, I guess I'll get him started on making sure he can take vitamin C first. I mean, you know, being in New York here, he hasn't been probably stung.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I would imagine maybe a few times this spring, but nothing, you know, all winter long. So.
Yeah, really. So you're almost starting from scratch a little bit with him. So I would start with, you can get that emergency that comes in a package you can rip open and pour into water, or you can...
Yep, I got it.
Yeah, or chewable, or, you know, or just the 1,000-milligram ones. But I would start the person, start with 1,000 milligrams, see if they can tolerate it. If they're having trouble, switch to a different brand of vitamin C. If they can't tell, you know, if they're having, like, a sign that somebody's having trouble tolerating vitamin C is diarrhea. Okay? So
okay.
If it's going right through them and they're having diarrhea and they weren't having diarrhea before they started the vitamin C regimen and you haven't even started the Bs yet, you know, I would start with the vitamin C and just see which brand they can tolerate and work their way up. And maybe, you know, if they do the emergency, they can do it 3 times a day to go up to 3,000 milligrams. If they're doing the, you know, the chewable, usually that's not made in 1,000 milligrams, although sometimes you never know. I don't know what's the best. I've heard through the grapevine that ester C is the best, but I'm not really sure if that's true. I'm not sure if what you get in the health food store is a whole lot better than what you get in CVS or something, you know. So I'm not promoting any one brand. But, you know, and I'm certainly not making any money off it, and I wouldn't want to. So, you know, the most important thing is to make sure that this person, but it's interesting that you asked me the question because it really made me think food allergies, two separate words, food relates to stomach and spleen. Allergies could have gone anywhere. Allergies can go to the liver, or allergies can go to the lungs and the large intestine. And I wasn't quite sure which way to go when you said the word allergies. So I figured when I got there, I would kind of ask some leading questions. And as soon as you told me it was the skin, I knew that we had to go to the lungs.
Okay. Well, I thank you. I'll look the meridians up in the book, and I'll
pass that
see what
along.
We can figure out here.
And since you're local, you know where to call me. So I'm available
to you
anytime. Or
thank you.
Email.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure.
Now, Amber, I got somebody else who has a question for you. She
sure.
Just stepped out of the room. But
okay.
Okay, this is my neighbor, Justin. She has a brother with cerebral palsy, and she's been...
Uh-huh. Wow, okay. So that's pretty intense. Cerebral palsy is something that's not just your average backache or something. You know, it's systemic. It's, you know, it's something from birth, right?
Yes, he was deprived of oxygen at birth.
Right. So it was diagnosed at birth or shortly thereafter, probably.
Yes.
And is the person in a wheelchair at this point? Or?
Yes, he's in a wheelchair. He's had a rhizotomy. He had it in 1989.
Okay.
He got better. He walked on crutches for a while. And then from being in the chair, his spine began to curve, and he has a lot of pain.
I'll tell you one thing. Bee venom is the best thing I know for pain. So I don't think I can necessarily say that the bees would cure anything, but they certainly will help with pain management. So that's the first thing that, you know, bee venom doesn't cure anything. It certainly is not going to cure cerebral palsy, but it can certainly help with pain management. And if he can, does he have much feel? Obviously, he has pain, so he has to have some feeling in his back there.
Yes, a lot.
What part of his back is it? From the waist down, or the waist up, or all over?
Rhizotomy is from the waist down.
Mm-hmm. So mostly it's the waist down. There's nothing from the waist up.
He had no surgeries that did anything. They said that he didn't really need anything. He got so far in getting better, the pain kind of took over, and he began to regress and not want to do physical therapy and not want to do anything.
Yeah, feeling discouraged probably.
And
Before I forget, and this goes for everybody, not just, you know, for your brother, but any kind of scarring? So does he have a scar?
Yes, he has. Well,
okay.
We call it a zipper.
Yeah, a zipper. Wow,
yeah,
has he got keloids? Has he got keloids? Has he got, like, raised areas on the scar?
Yes.
Okay, everyone who's listening to me now, I'm not just talking to you. I'm talking to everybody in this podcast, okay? This is really, really important. Scars block energy. Bee venom helps dissolve scars. So anybody who's got a scar, one of the first places you have to sting, you have to mostly, I don't know if you heard my earlier part of the talk, but I was telling people you have to stay on the trunk of the body, you know, the back or the front, not the arms and legs right away, because it swells and people get discouraged and don't continue. So your brother would be, it's your brother, right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
He would be a good candidate because he's probably not been stung very often with a bee, and so we would start anyway in his low back. That's where I would start if I lived near you, and if you were bringing him to me. I would start with a test sting on the low back, and I would use a big ice pack first, and I would numb the area. And when I say an ice pack, I don't mean regular ice in a bag, because it's wet and it'll melt and it'll be all drippy and the bee's not going to want to sting with that wetness there on the back. So I would use a hard ice pack or a gel pack you can get in the drugstore, and you can buy a few of them, and just keep them in your freezer. And then first you ice the area, you do a test sting, which means you lean the rear end of the female bee, because only females have stingers, and you lean the rear end of the bee up to the part of the skin. We're going to pick out a point on that scar, and probably because it's a scar, he won't feel it that much, and because scars tend to, you know, be kind of thick, and they don't have a lot of sensation in the scar part. And then we take the stinger out right away, and we wait 15 minutes and make sure that he doesn't go into anaphylactic shock. Then we would put some more ice back on the area. And after the 15 minutes are up, if he's ready to have a few more stings, I would continue to sting on that scar. Scars block energy. He's not going to get well until that, you know, we start to break through some of the adhesion. So whatever you're seeing on the outside of the zipper, there's a similar zipper inside. There's all kinds of adhesions, not just for him. Anybody who has a scar has got adhesions that we can't see from the outside. And so that's where I would start with him. If you actually sting right on the scar, you can go up the spine or you can go down. It doesn't matter which way you go. You can go around the edge of the scar, and that's called like surrounding the dragon. But I would start with a test sting. And at the most, the first day, I would only do maybe at the most that testing, and at the most maybe three more real stings. And what I mean by a real sting is where you sting, and then you leave the stinger in for 10 or 15 minutes, and then you take it out. So, you know, you could sting along that scar, right on the scar. Maybe not you sting, but maybe Rob would do it, but you know, or somebody there would help you, and you would actually, do, let's say, the equivalent of 3.5 stings, or if he doesn't like it, you could just do 2 or 1 even, but I would at least try a testing. But, you know, as I said to the earlier, you know, person I was on with, you have to make sure he can tolerate vitamin C before you start. Is he sort of an average male that's sort of an average size, or is he a little bit overweight from being sitting in the wheelchair and not being able to move around a lot?
Yeah, he's about 6'5" and
wow, 6'5".
Weighs maybe 170 pounds now at the very, very most.
Yeah, that's not a lot for that tallness. I would still say he needs to, before you start the bees, I would try to find some vitamin C that he can tolerate. And you want to work your way up to 3,000 milligrams every single day, even before you start the bees. And so the first day you could start with 500 milligrams, and the next day you could go to 1,000. And I was telling some of the other people that you can use that emergency that comes in a little packet, or you can use chewable vitamin C if that's easier for him, you know, or you can just do 1,000 milligrams at a time in a capsule form, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to eventually get up to 3,000 milligrams, and once he's been at 3,000 milligrams for like 2 or 3 days and he's tolerating it okay, then you could start with the ice and the testing, wait 15 minutes, and then you could do like anywhere between 1 and 3 real bee stings on that first day. But with him, because he's brand new to bees, he's not a beekeeper, he's not somebody who's, you know, and he's sitting around all day in that chair and he's going to be, it might be itchy and red and uncomfortable, he's not going to be a happy camper, you know, I'd rather start with less than more. So you can maybe start with the testing and maybe try one more, you know, see if he can tolerate it and, you know, work your way up to doing more. But I think you can get him pain-free. I don't know what else we can do, because I've had people walk from wheelchairs who were not able to walk. But since at one point in time he was able to walk with the crutches, and I assume you mean the Canadian crutches?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's possible that he might be able to get up and walk again with those crutches. I don't know that. But let's try to get him pain-free first. And in order to get him pain-free, we have to make sure that that scar is not blocking energy. There is an acupuncture meridian that runs right up the spine, and it's called the governor vessel, or the DU vessel. And it basically it's a very important meridian. DU4, or governor vessel 4, would be probably the most important point. And let's see, is Rob Russell still on the phone there? Or did he give you?
Yeah, no, I'm right here.
Okay.
We're sharing.
Do you have my book? Do you have my book, Rob?
No, I do not.
You do not. Okay. The governor, well, I'll send you a copy of the book or something. We'll get you, you know, we'll make sure that you have a copy of all the meridians that are on the back for sure in the next few days, you know, even if I have to fax it to you. But first we have to get this guy on some vitamin C to make sure he can tolerate it. But I would say that the governor vessel, the point number 4, is called Gate of Life. And that is probably the most important point, and it's below the waist, and it's right in the middle, you know, it's on the spine. And, you know, it's not that far from the waist. So you would count, you know, you would probably put your fingers on his waist, put your thumbs, you know, wrap your fingers around, your hand around his waist, and then go down, you know, 1 or 2 vertebrae there. And, you know, but especially if there's, you definitely want to sting on the scar on this man. We want to get him pain-free first. That will give him some hope. Then we can work on maybe getting him up on back onto the Canadian crutches. But and that'll give him more hope. But the most important thing right now for quality of life, he's got to be pain-free. Otherwise, he's not. He's, you know, it's hard to want to wake up every morning if you're in so much pain. I know, because I broke my spine, so I speak from experience about, you know, back pain. I know what it's like to have back pain. So, you know, and especially if you're sitting in a wheelchair, it's not very comfortable if you have a lot of back pain and if he's hunching over. But scars, I know on the last podcast, I ended up waiting to the last minute to talk about scars because somebody brought it up at the last minute, and I made a point to remind myself to bring it up early in the podcast because scars block energy. And if anybody, I don't care who they are, if they have, no matter what they're struggling with, if they've got a scar and you're not stinging that scar, eventually, you know, you have to. I mean, if it's in a part of the body where you're not supposed to go to right away because they're not a beekeeper, like their hand or their foot or something, that's okay. But when you can eventually go to that part of the body, then you really have to sting the scar. Otherwise, they're not going to get well. In a nutshell, I'd stake my life on it. You know, bee venom doesn't cure anything, but it helps the body heal itself. but a scar. A scar is an old injury, and this scar is a zipper, she called it. It's keloids. It's, I mean, we've got to get rid of that thing. We've got to just, like, zap the hell out of it with a bee venom, because bee venom will dissolve the scar and the adhesions, but it may take a while. It sounds like this is not going to be an easy case.
No,
I love these kind of cases. Don't get me wrong. It's not that, you know, it's a tough case, but it would be an exciting case for me. You know, if I lived in Florida, I'd be there tomorrow. You know, I'd be right there because I'm very interested in this case. So I hope you keep me posted on it.
Okay.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
And my brother right now is in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, really? That is very interesting because I have quite a bit of family that live out there. I will be going there for Christmas.
Wow, that's awesome.
I will definitely be in Portland for Christmas, so that might be an option. So this person is not in Florida with you?
No, he's not. I'm leaving a few weeks to drive that direction.
Oh. So how close to Portland is he?
Toward Neskowin, like toward the coast, about an hour and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right on the coast from Portland.
Mm. So what we need to do is we need to find a beekeeper in that area.
Okay.
Who's willing to help us.
That'd be wonderful.
Here I was thinking he was right next door.
Mm-mm.
I guess
used to be.
Yeah, up until a couple months ago, he was here with me. But
Oh, I see. I get it. I definitely missed that. I really, that went in one ear and out the other. I didn't realize he wasn't right there with you.
Oh.
I don't
okay.
think that I said it at all, because usually he is right with me. I'm just down here finishing
moving. I
don't know.
I guess I made the assumption. So do you live in Florida, or you just happen to be in Florida right now?
Yeah, we all, my brother, I've lived with my brother my whole life. I've had him my entire life.
Oh,
and I have two daughters, and the schools are better there, and I like the West Coast better, and I picked up and moved everybody there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, this is something that if you're really interested in learning how to do, I mean,
I would love it.
Rob Russell can show you how to do it. It's not hard. If I can learn, you can learn. Because I was not a beekeeper when I started this. So anybody can learn. And that's what I like about it. It's very low tech.
Yeah.
All you have to do is be able to, you know, pick up a bee, and if you're not comfortable picking up a bee with your fingers, you can learn to catch a bee on a tweezers by spraying the bee with water. And then you can take that bee, you can ice up the area, you can do the testing, you know, start them on the vitamin C, but you can definitely learn to do this.
And be wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll walk you through it, you know, when you get back out there. You can find a beekeeper out there that will help you with some bees, or you can maybe try to get a hive, see if somebody can put a hive on your property or nearby. And you can also get bees by mail. There are people that make a living off selling bees by mail in little boxes. So believe me.
You can send me little boxes of bees. Wonderful.
Yeah, you can get a little box of bees, and they last about 2 weeks. So I didn't realize he was out in Oregon, and so. But if you're going, are you going to be around for a couple of days or something?
Yes, I'm going to be here. Yes.
So maybe Rob Russell can show you how to do it, and then when you get out there, you can find a local beekeeper, and you know, there's an acupuncture school, you know, in Portland. I see a lot of people with acupuncture licenses like me don't. They're afraid of losing their license. That's why I don't charge for it, you know.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, but
terrible.
I mean, I will be in Portland
life.
For Christmas, so if you want to, you know, find a way for us to get together, I'm happy to show you everything I know.
That would be wonderful.
But it sounds like you don't want to wait till then. Christmas is a long time from now.
No, I will definitely.
You might want to get started sooner.
Yeah, I will definitely be investing my time and energy in this. Okay, you have a book.
I have a book. I have a website, and I'm on Facebook also now. But my, I'll just say it, my website is foreveramberrose.com. Very easy. My name is Amber Rose.
So okay.
Foreveramberrose.com. You just send me an email, you know, and we can you we can talk on the phone at some other point, you know, once you get back out there and settled. And but if he wants to, he can try starting some vitamin C and see if he can tolerate it. Because if he can't tolerate the vitamin C, it's going to be, you know, I really wouldn't recommend doing the bee sting therapy.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, it's not safe to do it without the vitamin C, because you need the vitamin C to produce the cortisol, which is the body's own natural form of cortisone. Now, has he been, has he had any cortisone injections, or has he ever tried prednisone, or have they ever used steroids with him?
Yeah, he's had cortisone shots. They stopped them. I don't know really why.
But did it work temporarily or anything?
I think it worked while he was in the hospital, but as soon as that you know, they gave him a small bag that was diluted, and then they did it 12 hours later, and then
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And they released him, and it worked for 3 days, and then kind of tapered off, and that was done.
Okay. So let me tell you this. Here's the good news. The good news is that if something responds to steroids, it's going to respond to the bee stings. So I think there's a pretty good chance we can get him pain-free, or at least lessen his pain and get him off some of the pain meds.
He's adverse to taking them, but when I do give them to him, he feels like $1 million. So I'm kind of like...
Yeah, I know. So, you know, cortisol is the body's own natural form of cortisone. So if he's responded to prednisone or cortisone, he's probably going to have a good experience with the bees, would be my guess. I can't promise, but it's my gut feeling from my almost 20 years of experience doing this. And pain is the easiest thing for me to work with.
That's awesome.
So, and if he's got a scar, you can sting right on the scar, and he probably won't feel it that much the way other people might feel if you were stinging them in their low back. They might really feel it and not like it. He might have a good experience with the bee venom, but he might not feel the bee sting as much because the scar tissue kind of blocks sensation. It's sort of like numb, makes the area a little bit numb. But I would still use ice with him. But I'm happy to visit you guys, or have you come to be where I am, you know. Because I will be in Portland for Christmas. I'll probably be out there for about a week.
That's so cool. I think that is so cool.
All right.
That's so cool.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the phone.
Not a problem.
Being on
the
show.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Now, I'm sure we got somebody else who may have some questions. Is Mike Flick still here? No, Mike is not here. And New York.
Scared him off, huh?
Okay, and you're in New York. I'm sure that's you I'm looking at.
Yeah, I'm in New York.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the names. We got a Danny Brewer on, Rob Overton, Dave McLeod, and myself.
Uh-huh.
Anybody have any questions for Amber? Well, I have some questions. Tell us how they can get your book.
I have an online store, and if you go to my website, foreveramber.com, I have several, first of all, I've updated it. Rob Russell, you're going to be very impressed. I've updated my website. I did it myself, and it's got music, and it's got beautiful pictures of bees and roses and buzzing bees, and it's really neat. I'm really happy with it. I mean, it doesn't
check it out.
It's not perfect, but it's better than the last one I had. And there's one page that's called Be Curious, E-E-E, Curious. And if you click on that page, it has the very first link that you can come to. Says if you want to learn more about, you know, Amber Rose. I mean, there is a page that talks about my books on my website, but if you want to pay with a credit card, then you want to go to the online store. But if you want to pay by check, you know, the address is right there. On it says the page is called Our Products, and I have two books on there. If you want to pay with a credit card, with PayPal, you go to the page called Be Curious, and it just says, you know, please, if you want to check out some of her books or her other creations that she's made, because I make jewelry and things made with feathers and stones. So you can click on that link, and it'll take you to my store, which is an Etsy store, which is, I used to say it was foreveramberrose.etsy.com, but I'm not sure that's right. So you might want to just go to my webpage and just click on the link that has the word Etsy in it, Etsy.com, and it'll take you right there, and then you just look for Be In Balance, and you can pay with PayPal with a credit card. That's one way of doing it, or you can send a check or money order if you would prefer that.
Oh.
Any other questions, or
David, anybody?
Well, this is Danny Brewer. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Danny Brewer, and I'm a beekeeper in Van Buren, Arkansas.
Wow, okay.
And, of course, I've been stung many times, just like all other beekeepers have, and it bothers me. You know, I get the red welt and the itching the second day, and after about the third day, it's all gone. But my wife, she does have arthritis, and I've talked to her a couple of times about getting stung, and she is just not interested at all.
Mm.
Thank you, what you were saying about earlier, about getting stung and removing the stinger immediately.
Yeah.
Of course,
that's
what I do
thing.
When I get stung out in the field.
Yeah, you just scrape it away, don't you? You just scrape it off with your fingernail.
If she'd be interested in trying that.
Yeah, I would definitely, first of all, I'm not sure if you were here for the whole podcast, but the wives of beekeepers tend to be more likely to get anaphylactic shock than other people because they've been around the bee venom, because they've been washing your clothes and stuff, but they've never gotten stung, or they haven't gotten stung much. So she is a prime candidate to have, you know, a reaction that she might not like. So I'd start her on vitamin C, see if she can tolerate that, and I would use a lot of ice with her. Now, were you on earlier when I said you have to stay on the trunk of the body first for the first,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
3 weeks?
Yeah, I've been on for at least 30, 40 minutes.
Oh, okay. So you have to, even though her arthritis might be, what, in her fingers? Or?
Yeah, her right hand is the biggest problem in her fingers.
Her right hand. Okay. Your first gut instinct of anybody who's, you know, loves their wives is to sting right where it hurts when you hear that bee venom is helpful for arthritis. That's the absolute worst thing to do, especially the wife of a beekeeper. You don't want to go to the hands and feet too early. You don't even want to go to the arms and legs too early. You want to start with a testing on her low back, or maybe in her mid back, you know, a little bit above the waist. I would use a lot of ice, and you do that testing. And eventually, you know, if she's able to tolerate it and she's willing, and, you know, a month or two go by and you've been working your way down to the wrist or wherever her hand, you could stay with that testing. You don't have to leave the stinger in, but it's going to be that hot, spicy burn. You know, it's going to be like that hot, spicy burn, and she may, you know, especially the first time you go down there, it's going to swell like the dickens. And I noticed in the first podcast that I did about 2 years ago, I mentioned that I was cleaning out a hive body, and I thought I didn't have any live bees in there, and there were a few dead bees in there. There were about maybe five, and they got me all. They all got me. And they weren't even alive, but their stingers were still intact. So I got stung in my right hand, exactly probably where you'd be stinging her, and I got 5 stings, which is not what you would do with her. You would start with a test sting. You would do very slowly, and you wouldn't do it right away. But when you do go to her hand eventually, it'll be the first time you're going there. And what I've noticed for me is, like, just your fingers swell, your hands swell, you know, and it just is, unless she's really serious about this, she may just feel like giving up. So you want to do plenty of vitamin C. You want to do lots of ice. Make sure the hand is really iced well with a hard ice pack or one of those soft gel ice packs. And she might have to sleep with her hand in a bag of those ice packs, and she may make you get up in the middle of the night to change that bag of ice because she's not going to like it, and she may quit. So we already know she's not so interested in this and is kind of scared of it probably and is not really enthusiastic. So it's going to be a hard sell, and you're selling something, you know, like a fuller brushman that's going to the door of somebody who already has plenty of brushes. They don't really want what you're selling. So what I wish I could say to you is I wish I had a cream that was made with bee venom in it. It used to be a cream that I could bring in from Germany. They've discontinued it. The FDA, you know, stopped it. Then I got a cream from Romania. I mean, you know, I brought it in. Now I can't get it anyplace. You know, you can try going online and seeing if you can get some bee venom. You could type into Google bee venom cream, and she might be willing to do that. But still, I would definitely make sure you do the vitamin C, because you don't want to work with bee venom without vitamin C in the body, because otherwise she could go into anaphylactic shock, because she's been around venom and she's never been stung, is my guess. Hey,
well, we have the shots here just in case, because I got 8 hives right here at my house.
Yeah, yeah. But the wives of beekeepers and the kids of beekeepers are more likely to develop anaphylactic shock only because they've been around the venom and they haven't been stung. That's a hazard. That's somewhat of an occupational hazard of being a beekeeper. If you have family that's washing your clothes or your bee suit or something, I'm not telling you to wash it yourself. I'm just saying she's more likely than anybody else, than the normal, regular person who would walk through your door who has arthritis and wants to get stung. So that's why you would definitely want to make sure you have an EpiPen and make sure it's not expired and make sure you know how to use it before you need it. You know, make sure you read the directions and you can do it right through clothing. But I have like 20 of them. They're all expired. And I show them whenever I give a course because I want people to know I've been doing this almost 20 years and I've never used one.
Yeah, I checked my pins out the other day and showed them to my son's 10, and I'm trying to get him to be a beekeeper with me. And right now, he's just my smoker. That's all he does is run the smoker. So therefore, the bees don't hardly bother him at all.
Yeah.
But eventually, he's going to get one just by playing out in the yard and being out in the yard and
right.
Waiting for the day.
Right. Well, you know, on the last podcast, I don't know if Rob Overton's still on, but you know, I talked about this fellow named Al, and he's from Pennsylvania. He's still around, live and kicking. And he was diagnosed with cancer probably about 5-6 years ago, and he was given like 3 weeks to put his affairs in order, and he had colon cancer, and they said there was nothing they could do. And he went out to his hives, and he just asked God to just sting him in the right place. He stuck his hand in the hive. He's still alive.
When I first started becoming a beekeeper last summer, I went over to a friend's house as a beekeeper, and he deals with his bees most time with nothing on. He just walked out and deals with them. So I tried to be Mr. Tough Guy and went with him, and boy, I caught it right between the eyes, right above the glasses. It was my first sting, and I thought,
oh,
if I can handle this, I can handle one just about anyway. Of course, I got the stomach and the arms and the legs, and you know, if I do that quick, it's no big deal at all.
Yeah, right. But, you know,
thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking. Now, see, that's a really good question because the the wives of beekeepers or children of beekeepers are really at risk, because especially wives, if they're doing the laundry. If they're touching the bee suit, they're touching the shirt, the shorts, you know, and they're not getting stung. Yeah.
Well, I believe it or not, I don't have her wash my.
Yeah.
I catch all my rainwater in buckets and stuff around the house.
Huh.
If I feel my gloves are starting to get stiff or my suit
yeah.
starting to get bad, I just go dunk it in my rain barrel and then
well, that's
it up,
good.
Let it dry, and it just finds
mm-hmm.
That way it doesn't get any other odor on it besides this.
Well, that's good. Well, that's good. Well, it sounds to me that especially if it's the hands, you know, they might swell if you do some bee stings there. So you wouldn't want to go there right away. You'd want to sting the, you know, her back first, and eventually work your way down there. But I think it's going to be a tough sell because I don't think she's real enthusiastic from what I'm hearing. And most people to do bee stings as a therapy, you know, they usually have to be pretty desperate, like the guy who's in the wheelchair who's, you know, who's got that horrible back pain that his sister was on the phone a few minutes ago. That's the guy who's going to be really, you know, willing to do it because he doesn't have a lot of other options. Whereas arthritis, you know, the medical doctors are going to probably try to give you lots of pills and things. But Charlie Mraz, when he was alive and well and alive up there in Middlebury, Vermont, they said he had the biggest rheumatology practice in all of New England because all the rheumatology doctors who didn't know what to do with their patients sent everybody to Charlie for bee stings. So, I mean, you know, bee venom is very good for rheumatoid arthritis. It's osteoarthritis is not as easy as rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis seems to respond more quickly and better to the bees. If I can get you, Rob Russell, the National Geographic article about me, the story is about a woman, her name is disguised, you know, to protect her innocence and her, you know, her privacy. But I was stinging her on her hands for rheumatoid arthritis. And then she was, at that time I was still able to get the cream, and she would come to me once every couple of weeks, and then she would use the cream in between. And I made that promise to you before we get off, or at some point, I want you to just send me your street address again, and I'll make sure to get that packet out to you that will include the National Geographic article that had the article about me and the woman who had, she was probably in her 80s, 70s or 80s when I saw her. I'm not sure if she's still alive, but she, you know, because it's been a while since that article came out, but I was stinging her for rheumatoid arthritis, and we had worked our way to her hands. She was getting about 25 bee stings in her hands, in both hands, once or twice a week. And then eventually it was once every 2 weeks, and then she'd use the cream in between. Any other questions?
No. Anybody?
Anything I didn't cover?
Yeah, I'm for tonight. Yeah, I was on, and thing you should mention, I'm just glad to hear Alice doing well. I actually was teaching a intro beekeeping course this morning in Long Island, and every time I always, you know, I seem to work in Al's story every time because you know it's a great story. And I seem to get a lot of people that, you know, are interested in the, you know, the bee sting therapy and stuff. So actually, for my presentation, I have a page and stuff, and I, you know, reference your book and stuff for them. But
nice.
But I'm glad to hear Al is still doing well.
Yeah, well, I used to live on Long Island, so there are a lot of my students are still there. There is one acupuncturist that I know for sure who's still doing it. Actually, two. One in I think Central Islip, and one in the Huntington area. Actually, the president of the AP Therapy Society, Frederica Keller, is an acupuncturist who I train, and she's in Huntington. And then one of my other students is who graduated is in Central Islip. So there and there are quite a few people. My name, you know, my name is well known there because I lived there for 5 or 6 years. So, yeah. Any other questions? I'm looking through my notes to see what I didn't say. There's so much I probably didn't say, but you know, there aren't a lot of double blind studies with, you know, with this bee acupuncture or bee venom therapy. But, you know, all medicines started out with anecdotal evidence, and this is, you know, this is a folk medicine, so it's not approved by the FDA, but it's approved by the GOD, and that's good enough for me. So, but I just want to say that absence of proof is not proof of absence, and, you know, I believe that the bee sting was really the first acupuncture needle, and what we're trying to do with acupuncture right now is trying to recreate the bee sting. So when I first read about this in the Washington Post almost 19 years ago, the article was called Hope Stings Eternal instead of Hope Springs Eternal. And I took one look at it, and I just thought, wow, I wonder if they stung in the acupuncture points. It would be better than just stinging haphazardly anywhere. And I thought I made it up, actually. And it was very humbling to discover that, you know, they've been doing it in China for 3,000 to 5,000 years. So I didn't make it up at all. But I'm just looking to see in case anybody else wants to break in here. I'm just looking through my notes. But basically, I mean, usually people ask me how it works. You sting somebody with a bee, it's sort of like a cursor on a computer. You're like pointing an arrow to the body to come here, break down this bee venom, and as an afterthought, the body cleans up the bee venom, but if there's anything else wrong in that part of the body, the body will clean that up as well. What you're trying to do is the idea of homeopathy that Hahnemann, who is the head of homeopathy, said that you can't cure anything that's chronic. You have to make it acute. So if you have a chronic ailment, chronic low back pain, chronic fatigue, chronic, you know, anything that's chronic, chronic cerebral palsy, you know, whatever it is, MS, basically it's been around for a while. You can just break your leg. You have to make it acute. So you make it acute by stinging the person with a bee, and then the body wakes up and goes there. It's sort of like when you have a chronic illness, the body sort of has gone to sleep, and the doctor within us has gone to sleep like Rip Van Winkle. And so we have to wake it up. And so bee sting is a perfect way to wake up the body. It's a wake-up call, you know. It's a foreign protein. It's a poison entering the bloodstream. And there are two ways to break down that foreign protein. And one way is heat. And so what happens is the area gets very red. So that's the heat. You know, the heat is then coming to the area to break down the protein. And the other way is diluting it. So if you've swallowed some poison, first thing poison control is going to tell you is to drink a lot of water. So you get swelling in the area where you just stung yourself because the body's reacting by, you know, bringing water to the area, fluids to the area. And we want to make sure that everybody's going to be doing their vitamin C, because otherwise the body can't make the cortisol. Looking to see. We talked about scars. The belly button is your very first scar, so everybody has a scar. So nobody can say they don't have a scar, because everybody's had their first scar was their belly button. Something that came up in the last podcast, I mentioned that the bees survived Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and I think because they instantly recognized the emergency, they sealed up the hive of propolis, and they survived. And somebody mentioned on the last podcast that they're now using propolis for use for radiation burns, which I thought was very interesting, kind of a little twist there. We talked about the healing crisis. So usually within the first 4 to 6 treatments, there's a healing crisis. It's a delayed systemic reaction that feels like you have the flu. That what happened to me was I felt it the first night. But, you know, I have a strong immune system, so my immune system responded very quickly. I immediately felt a euphoria. We talked about this on the last podcast. Somebody asked if you could feel high or inebriated from the bee venom, and I said yes, because I've experienced it myself. So my first few bee stings, I felt really like a natural high, and then I sort of crashed. But around the time of day that relates to the bladder, and I was having a bladder infection, I was standing in the library, and I was checking out some books on bees, and I felt like I was going to faint. And I thought maybe I should say something to the person in front of me in line that I was stung by bees today. But it sort of passed. It was like a wave, and it passed over me. And when I walked out to the car, all of my symptoms of my bladder infection were gone. And I realized when I looked at my watch, it was the right time of day for the bladder meridian. But so then I realized that there was really a connection between acupuncture and the bees. But, you know, that's sort of like a little bit of the healing crisis. But by that night, I felt like I kind of had the flu, and I just, you know, went to bed early. You know, I mean, I had the itching and the swelling and all that, but that healing crisis is like, if you don't get that, then it's kind of, it's sort of like getting your car stuck in a snowdrift. You have to get up and over that snowbank and get on the road so that, you know, you can be on the road again to health. The other thing is we don't want to suppress symptoms. Bee venom is it's not about curing anything, but it's also not about suppressing anything. We're just trying to help the body heal itself. So the bee venom is there to kind of wake up your own inner physician, and then your inner physician takes over. We want to make a medicine out of the illness itself, and it's not a Band-Aid approach. So I never treat people. I don't treat diseases. And I trust a change in the person, not just a change in the symptom. And you can treat your patient with your words, because your words are just as powerful as the bees. So be sure to be really encouraging and hopeful. So as long as there's no cure right now for HIV, AIDS, cancer, or MS, you know, we all have to act like we're all one, and we all have these illnesses, and we have to live each day as if our very lives depended on what we do and say every single day. And if we don't have the, you know, answers, we still need to ask the questions. And life is lived forwards and understood backwards. So we learn a lot more from our mistakes than we do from all our successes. And if I just could go back to just for a minute in closing to the young man who has the cerebral palsy and is out in Oregon right now. The whole goal is, in a sense, we want to sort of kiss the boo-boo. We want to give him a lot of TLC, not just the bees and the vitamin C, but the TLC that goes with it, and take away the isolation. Because when you're in pain, you just, you know, when you're in that much pain and you're struggling so much and you're in a wheelchair, one of the hardest things is to not feel isolated. And so think about the fact that people that you're treating may be feeling very, very isolated, especially if they're in a wheelchair or, you know, they can't walk, they can't get out, they can't drive, they're depending on other people to take them where they're going. So I don't know if that answers all your questions, but your life is your mission, and bees have a message for your life, and you're all beekeepers, so you know how important it is to keep the bees alive on the planet. And somebody was the first person who was on, I don't know if he's still there, from Atlanta. We were talking about his garden, and he says the bees have come back nice and strong for him this year, and I'm very happy to hear that. And then maybe I'll just end with a quote from a Spanish poet named Machada. Last night I dreamed, O marvelous one, that honeybees were in my heart, making honey out of my old failures. So thank you very much, everybody, for being on the podcast. And I'm available for questions even after this is over. Just foreveramberrose.com. You can email me. And be happy to answer any other questions.
Amber, I have to say thank you very much. This is a very enlightening podcast, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to benefit from this.
I'm glad.
And my neighbor, Jessa, is just totally impressed with just listening to you. She says, wow, I got a chance to meet that lady sometime.
Yeah.
She is just totally excited, and she'll probably look into acupuncture school before you.
You never know.
Yeah,
that's
well,
right.
She's
you,
like,
that's
oh,
right.
I go to school there.
That's right. There's an acupuncture school right there, so right near Portland. So you never know. But the good thing is that I'm out in Portland now that my son lives in British Columbia. You know, I'll be going out for Christmas, and his in-laws just moved to Portland, just got jobs out there, and I'm actually hoping at some point to move out there myself. But at this point, I'm still in New York. So.
Now, you're what part of New York? Rob's part, pretty much?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm in Woodstock, New York. I'm in Ulster
right?
County,
yeah.
Woodstock. So, like, the concert, it didn't really happen here, but it probably could have, you know. But we're pretty close to where it happened, so good enough. Close enough. They sell tie-dye T-shirts up here, so, you know, it's like the concert sort of happened here. Not really.
It sort of was there. Well, it says Woodstock, and they're in Woodstock, so I guess they're happy with it, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So, but for the moment, I'm here, and until I sell my house, I'm here. So, you know, but at some point, I'm hoping to move out to the West Coast, only because my son lives in British Columbia, and I just became a grandma, so I'd like to be a little closer to my granddaughter.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So I might be out closer to Portland, to that woman. I might be closer than she even ever dreamed of.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you never know.
Well, I guess what I'd like to do at this time is probably we'll open it up one last time to questions, and then we're going to go right into the off show.
Okay.
And anybody? Going once, going twice. Amber, again, your website is foreveramberrose.com?
That's correct.
Okay. And if anybody's still having troubles finding you, you can go to me, Rob Russell, 352-575-0121, and I'll put you in touch with Amber. I get a hold of her on Facebook. She's on my friends list on Facebook. I'd probably say start there.
Okay.
And with
yeah,
that, I'd like
in.
To say thank you and God
okay.
bless you and good night. And let's go to the post show.
Okay.
And I have to dial in with the other phone. One second. I love this. So, anyways, anybody?
It was great. I loved it. Every minute.
Yeah. I've got to dial in the...
Yeah.
I'm on a different phone line. It's a deal.
Hmm.
The other line died. I got 5 lines, so I...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just... The phone died. I must have dialed the wrong number. It says it's been disconnected. How can that be? One more time. So, David, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I pretty much kept it on mute, kind of fiddling around here.
You've been busy there, huh?
I have.
Yeah. So you heard me talk about
yeah,
you at the end there. I mentioned the guy who had the garden, so.
I did. Thank you. I don't know. The older I get, I don't want to come across tree hugger or anything like that, new age radical or whatever, but the older I get, the more I realize the generations before had a little more common sense.
Yeah, they sure did. Let me tell you, our grandparents, they probably knew a lot more than we did, you know?
I don't want to be rude,
yep.
We're going to the post show.